So then, at 8:17, just about, when it comes to winners and losers from the US-China trade war, we're reminded of a couple of adages. One says that it's the shrimp that gets injured when two whales fight. The other reminds us, when the snipe and clam quarrel, it's the fisherman who profits. So, little up in the clouds for the purposes of politics. But to push these sayings into the realm of geopolitics, the Economist Intelligence Unit has published a report under the title Creative Disruption, Asia's Winners in the US-China Trade War. And of course, when we see losers, often there is a flip side to that. Nick Marrow, analyst with the Economist Intelligence Unit's Asia team, I think is on the line with us now. We just heard the line cut off. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Yep, I'm here.
Great to hear. And you're in Hong Kong right now, and we're trying to sort of reflect on who the unfortunate shrimps and lucky fishermen are, to come back to the two adages I read out before. What is the size of the global damage, though, wrought generally by the trade standoff between the US and China?
Right. Well, the potential, at least what we at the EIU think, the potential is quite likely to be severe, particularly because how integrated supply chains are, particularly in Asia. But if we look at the dispute to date, actually, the impact of the trade war has been quite limited. We had trade data from China out yesterday. We've seen trade data from South Korea, Malaysia, Taiwan, all out over the past week. And actually, exports have been doing pretty well. And that's because purchasers are front-loading their shipments in advance of tariffs later this year. So actually, global growth has been humming along pretty okay. But we are expecting the dispute to worsen in 2019, as more tariffs come into effect.
Do you regard the G2 trade dispute as a kind of game of chicken? Or do we see the US being rather confident of winning and enjoying actually some prosperity on the home economic front?
Yeah, well, a game of chicken is one way to describe it. I mean, neither side looks willing to back down, and they've met each other blow for blow. I mean, at the same time, it's important to note that much of the tariff aggression, specifically, is coming from the U.S. I mean, China is just meeting the U.S. With what it sees are reciprocal actions. But the issues underlying the dispute are very real, these things of forced tech transfer, IP dispute, and the things that the Canadians, Australians, EU, Japanese, South Korean, they all agree with the U.S. on this issue, just perhaps not on the solution. In terms of the winners between the U.S. and China, if we look at the current situation, it's true the U.S. economy is having a boom, but that's due to other factors like strong private investment, a healthy labor market, the impact of the tax cut in early 2017. And as I mentioned before, the trade war hasn't really had any massive change in the U.S. trade relationship with China. I mean, just last month, China actually registered a record trade surplus with the U.S. But again, this is all expected to change in 2019. And so any type of economic boom that the U.S. is experiencing right now likely isn't going to be sustained as the dispute escalates.
When we assess the losers in this trade war and how far that collateral damage goes, what would you say to address that?
Sure. Well, I mean, I guess in talking about losers, we have two different perspectives. And I'll talk about the first one, which is in terms of industry. So I did just mention that right now the disruptions from the trade war have been very mild. But if we look at it by industry, we do see a slightly different situation, primarily in places like agriculture. I mean, China has essentially stopped all shipments of U.S. soybeans to its market. And China is the largest export destination for U.S. farmers for that product. That's led to a very sharp decline in U.S. soy shipments this year, and farmers there are inevitably getting squeezed. But so are farmers in China. I mean, U.S. soybean is a very key component of pig feed in China, and that's going to push up pork prices in the long term. But if you look at countries, we are expecting a number of Asia's major tech hubs to come under increasing pressure, and that's economies like Taiwan, South Korea, Japan, Singapore. And that's because the supply chains between these markets and China is just so huge. I mean, I've mentioned that we haven't seen any impact yet, but we are expecting to see pressure increasingly on these economies in 2019 and perhaps even until 2020.
The Economist Intelligence Units, where you're based, the report shed light on some of the winners, claimed Vietnam and Malaysia were doing very well. Also, Thailand and Cambodia highlighted. Can you elaborate a little bit further on those points?
Sure. Well, I mean, as you mentioned earlier, there is potential that the trade dispute could actually lead to some winners. But I should caveat that by saying that the winners would be really in the long term. I mean, this is a story that we're looking at, you know, over the next 2 to 3 years, maybe even 3 to 5 years. But we do expect a number of China's neighbors to potentially actually see some benefits due to investment relocation, supply chain adjustments. I mean, for Malaysia and Vietnam, both of them are well positioned to benefit primarily in the tech industry. I mean, both are very already home to established tech supply chains and have strong trade infrastructure networks. For Thailand and Malaysia, to a lesser extent, that's a similar story in auto parts manufacturing. I mean, Thailand is already a strong regional auto parts manufacturing hub. And then if you look at places like Vietnam and Bangladesh, even India to a degree, we're expecting some benefits there, primarily in industries like ready-made garments, textiles and clothing, because those countries already have the existing industrial capacity. And so the story there is these countries will try and position themselves to take advantage of any investment from companies looking to not necessarily abandon China, but to diversify out of China to insulate themselves from the U.S. and Chinese tariffs.
We spoke with a Korean expert recently who suggested the rivalry between the U.S. and China is likely to be a long-term problem and is not going to go away anytime soon. Every time we speak to an analyst on this subject, we sort of try to get a gauge of a forecast. What's your take?
Well, our take is actually very similar. If you look at the nature of the dispute, I mean, tariffs are a very surface-level area, but the economic dispute really, it started under President Obama in 2016. I mean, a lot of the stuff that we're seeing under the Trump administration is building on concerns that the Obama administration had a couple of years ago that just didn't go away. And so we're expecting that to go at least until 2020, which corresponds roughly with President Trump's first term, if not after. And that's because the issues at play here are really the hallmarks of Chinese industrial policy, things like Made in China 2025, which are going to be very difficult to readjust. In addition, we're increasingly seeing potential that the economic dispute could spill over into other areas, including security, political friction, concerns over Taiwan or the South China Sea. And so there is a lot of potential here to keep tensions hot, probably into the long term.
Finally, the Democrats in control of the House of Representatives, does that not come into your forecast at all?
It has, and I'm actually happy to say that our U.S. team correctly forecasted the results in the midterms. We expect the Democrats to take back the House and the Republicans to hold on to the Senate, and that's already been built into our China trade forecasts. And the reason why is we're not expecting a major shift on China policy in the U.S. as a result. There are some voices thinking that, but there are two important things to remember. The first is that standing up to China is really one of the few remaining areas of consensus between Democrats and Republicans back in D.C. It's really the one thing that brings people together across the line. In addition, I mean, that's the first area. If you look at the second area, which is trade, I mean, Democrats historically have been a pretty anti-trade party. When Obama was pushing through the TPP, the greatest criticism he encountered was from the Democrats. And so this combination of anti-China, anti-trade is going to lead to somewhat of a perfect storm where this trade pressure is at the very least going to continue, if not accelerate to a degree.
Right. Nick Marrow from the Economist Intelligence Unit's Asia team in Hong Kong, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.